So thank you all very much for having me as your guest. I feel very welcome. And I feel very, very fortunate to be in the association of such nice Vaishnavas. Pardon me if my voice comes and goes. It's kind of weak. This verse is in prose, so I can just say the Sanskrit. We can do the word for word if you like. Atacha vastu ihavatma sambhavanena svayam adamo janmatapo vidyachara varnash ramavato variyaso na balu pahu manyata sva mritakas eva mritva krisha danname niraye vaksira nipatito duranta vatanna hi asnute. We can do word for word on this one. I'm going to do a couple of verses because there's not much of a purport. So, Ata. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. A low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, I am great, and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man, even in this lifetime. And after death, he is thrown headfirst into the hell known as Charkardama. He is there, he must suffer great tribulation at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One should not become falsely proud. One must be respectful toward a person more elevated than he by birth, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order. If one does not show respect to such highly elevated persons, but indulges in false pride, he receives punishment in Charkardama. Om Gyana to Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam, Tadati Sva Parantikam. Om Gyana to Tarubhyas Chakripas. I'll speak on this verse first and then on the other verses. They're kind of they're long verses, but they don't have purports. But I'd like to make a point as we go. I was thinking this verse here. I'll read the translation again. A low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, I am great, and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man, even in this lifetime. And after birth, he is thrown headfirst into the hell known as Charkardama. He must suffer great tribulation at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. In this age of Kali, this is a description of pretty much most people. Huh? You know, most people today are thinking themselves very great and very accomplished, even though it's kind of a sliding scale. You can see, for instance, you know, one man may have, he buys a new car, and it's all shiny and new, and he's so very proud, and he's thinking, he's falsely proud. of his car. I am better. Just see how great I am. But then he pulls up at a stoplight and a much more expensive car pulls up beside him. And that man is thinking, I am so great. I am greater than everyone. And then they go down the street and that man pulls up next to an even more expensive car. And in that car, there's someone who's thinking, oh, just see how great I am. My car is more expensive than yours. I must be a better man than you. I must be more intelligent, you see. So this is going on. You can see this in modern society. You can see it in the clothes that people wear. If you look closely at the way people dress themselves, one man is wearing a new suit of clothes and he's thinking, and I am very special. I'm very accomplished. When people see me, they'll know. Just by looking at me, they'll know how great I am. And then he passes a man on the street who's got an even more expensive set of clothes. You see, and it goes on and on like this. This is the thinking in almost every step of material life. I need a newer house. I need a bigger house, a better house. This is common. People don't think of themselves compared to others according to the other man's austerity or his social standing. It's reduced down to a material consciousness, which is very unfortunate. You see? It's very unfortunate. It's common in this age of Kali, and it's driven by one thing and one thing only. Arjuna asked Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, why is it that sometimes we are forced to act? It's as if we're pushed to act. And Krishna replied, it's lust only, Arjuna, simply by lust. You see, this lust comes from attachment. It's born out of hankering and lamenting. Hankering for something we don't have and lamenting because we don't have it yet. You see? And from this comes lust. And there are different levels of lust. In the beginning, lust is a strong yearning, but it starts to grow. And it starts to grow. And we feed it. We feed it more and more until it becomes very strong. And it burns, like Krishna says, it burns like fire. He tells Arjuna, his lust burns like fire. You see? And then when the lust is not fulfilled, of course it's never fulfilled, but when it's not fulfilled, when the living entity realizes that his desires are not being fulfilled on a timely basis, as quickly as he might want them to be. And then this lust turns to anger. And Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that this is the destroying agent of this world, this lust, anger, envy, lust, and greed. But this lust, when it turns to anger, and then you can see it. You can see it on the faces of people as you travel. As I've traveled from America to London, England, and from there to Delhi, and then I went to Vrindavan, and then to Govardhan, and then to Calcutta, Mayapur, and then Bombay, and here. But as I travel, I notice, I like, as Srila Prabhupada did when he went to New York, he would walk the streets. I like to walk the streets and study the people. You can see the faces of people in Kali Yuga. When do you see happy people? You know, when you're out on Harinam, you look at some of the people. The only time that people have a happy face maybe is when they hear the kirtan. Huh? Isn't it? They see the devotees and they see you dancing. First it's, what? Ah. You know, and as they listen, you can see their facial expression. You know, and they smile. You know, they see this happiness. And you're distributing. You're distributing this happiness. But before the devotees came along, what's their faces look like? You know, tight. I want to hurry. I want to get in front of you. Because if I don't get in front of you, you'll get in front of me. You see? Everywhere they go, they're hurrying and they're rushing through life. Now, what is your life like if you have to hurry and rush? You hurry and rush through bad times. You hurry and rush through unpleasant situations. If your life is happy, and if it's a pleasant situation, then you relax. Then you relax and you think, Jai, this is very nice. You see? So why is everyone rushing? You know? We can look out our window, we can see everyone rushing, blowing their horn. Such anxiety. Because they're not happy. They're not happy because they're angry. And they're not they're angry because their material desires aren't being met. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, anger comes from unfulfilled material desires. You see? So logically, an intelligent man can tell right away if anger comes from unfulfilled material desires, then if I want to be happy and I don't want to live my life in an angry state, then perhaps I should give up material desires. You see? Give up material desires. Give up material activities. Give up hankering and lamenting for material objects of the senses. But it's just like if you have a small child, a baby, and the child picks up something that's delicate and you think they may break it or they may hurt themselves with it, you want to take it away. So you take it away and the child right away starts to cry. So what you have to do is when you take it away, you immediately give them something else. So when we give up our material desires, we have to immediately take up something else. We have to take up spiritual desires. We have to take up pursuit of spiritual goals. It's a nature of the soul to hanker. So let us hanker for a better spiritual life. If you're going to be in anxiety, if you're going to have goals for yourself, instead of having a goal for more money, a better car, nicer, more expensive clothes, why not hanker and desire for a better spiritual life? Set goals for yourself. It's kind of human nature to set a goal and compete with yourself. How many rounds can you chant? 16 is the minimum. It's simply the minimum. 16 rounds a day is very good. But once you get comfortable with 16 rounds a day, why not set a goal for yourself to do 20? Raise the bar. Let's go for 20. Hanker for more. If you're reading an hour a day, try 20 rounds a day and read an hour and a half a day. you see. Set goals, you see. That's, and there is ego, but it's not false ego. When you set a goal for yourself, spiritual goals, and achieve those spiritual goals. And there is a pride when you achieve your spiritual goals, but it's not false prestige, because you're not doing it so that everyone will point their finger and say, oh, just see, what a great devotee. Huh? As you probably don't even tell anybody. This is your own goal between you and your spiritual master, your guru. My dear guru, I am now chanting 24 rounds a day and reading 2 hours. My dear spiritual master, I'm now chanting 32 rounds a day. I'm reading 3 hours a day. You see? And then that becomes the level. Whatever that level you achieve and maintain for some time, that becomes normal to you. You see? If you become used to chanting 25 rounds a day, and today you only chant 20, you feel like you failed yourself. Now, to the devotee next to you, he may think, wow, you chanted 20 rounds today. Wow. But to yourself, you think, I only got 20 rounds chanted today. You know, I was in nonsense. I took a long nap, or, you see. It's in your head. You see? So you can see the materialistic person. He's got his goals of making more money, having a bigger house, a nicer car, nicer clothing. And here's the devotee, and he's got his goals of chanting more rounds, reading more, doing more service, becoming more humble. I knew this one devotee, he set a goal for himself not to criticize anyone under any circumstances. Under no circumstances, not to criticize anyone. You see? Now, this is spiritual life. You know, it's not that if you give up material life that you become bored. You have nothing to do. You have the same activity, but it's spiritualized. As Srila Prabhupada says, it becomes Krishnaized. Huh? You're still pushing hard. You're still setting goals. But it's spiritual. You want to advance in Krishna consciousness. Huh? Not because you want some prestige. Not because you want some notoriety. But because you want to serve your guru and Krishna better. If you advance, you can serve mankind. You can serve the living entities better. And ultimately, you have that responsibility. You see? Because someday you'll become an older devotee. Someday you'll be a devotee 40, 45 years, 50 years. Yeah? And people will expect things from you. They will expect it. It comes natural. If you've been a devotee 40 years, people expect you to have advanced in Krishna consciousness. You see? So that is coming. That's coming for everyone. So we might as well work on that now and advance in Krishna consciousness. Huh? So I'm going to read another verse. Are there any questions now on this verse or what I've been discussing? Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. As you said in the class that you increase your commitment more and more. Show your more and more commitment as and when you spend more and more time in Krishna consciousness. But a stage comes for a devotee that sometimes he increases his commitment of more reading, more hearing, more chanting. And on the other side, more responsibility also comes because you spend more time in Krishna consciousness. And devotee expects something more from you. So there is always a clash in yourself. Why, whether I should commit more and more to my hearing and chanting, or I should commit more to do some responsibility with the other devotees are giving you. In that circumstances, what should a devotee do? Because it happens in sometimes that when you spend more time to doing those responsibility, your inner commitment or inner sadhana becomes loose. And sometimes it disturbs your internal consciousness or your purity is little bit sacrificed here and there. In that circumstances, devotee, should he satisfy other devotee or should be caring more for his own personal purity as such?
Actually, that instance does not injure the devotee inside. It's how we deal with it. You see? And that's actually very common. A devotee's working very hard on his personal sadhana, and he's advancing in Krishna consciousness, while at the same time, he becomes maybe a bigger asset to the temple. And so he's given more responsibility, and he's balancing his service and his sadhana. So, but that does not disturb the devotee. Having a lot of service and a lot of sadhana is not disturbing. It's just not. You can't make it disturbing unless you start to lose how you deal with it in your mind. If it affects your material desires, it could become disturbing. More sadhana and more service is more ecstasy, more Krishna consciousness. Because more sadhana, right? More chanting. That means more praying to Krishna. My dear Lord, please engage me in your loving devotional service. And so he reciprocates and gives you more loving devotional service. How can that cause you distress? It's how you... Would you like to hear what Srila Prabhupada said about that? I remember Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami. He was a very important man with in ISKCON. He was always very strict with his sadhana, very strict with himself. Chanted extra rounds, read a great deal, and Srila Prabhupada gave him more and more service because he was a very qualified man. So he had so much service and so much sadhana. And one day he said to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm having trouble reading your books. I don't have time to read." And Prabhupada said, "What? You don't have time to read?" And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "No, I have so much sadhana, I have so much service. What should I do?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Sleep less. Eat less. So don't give up your service, don't give up your sadhana, but manage it somehow. And if you have to, if the combination of your service and your sadhana causes you to get a little spiritually weak, take a spiritual vacation once in a while. Go to the Dham, go to Vrindavan. Go to Govardhan. Our Bhaktivedanta Ashram in Govardhan is a wonderful place. You can get spiritually rejuvenated there. I mean, it's just amazing, the feeling. Does that answer your question?
I understand that it is an immaturity that of a devotee that he cannot keep proper balance, and that is the immaturity of the devotee. But sometimes... we know it is immaturity, But because we are not on that elevated stage, and the body doesn't give the support, and because the body doesn't give the support, as such, we have our bodily complications, we are getting old, all complications are there. Plus, if you are not on a renounce order life, so many other responsibilities are also there, which we cannot forego, because that is a negative effect on the preaching. So in all those circumstances, to take care of the other responsibility, plus to take care of your body, plus to increase your sadhana, plus to increase the commitment, to decrease the sleep, to decrease the food, that is somewhat, I feel it is not so practical enough to, because we have to go on till the last breath of our life, our Krishna consciousness. So to some extent, for me, it is finding it a little bit difficult to reduce the sleep or reduce the food and then to maintain it out. So in that circumstances, what is the practical approach?
Now that's a different story. That's a different situation. If your sadhana and your service, your seva, cause you to cut back on your sleeping and you're eating to the point to where it's your body starts to dwindle and it becomes a physical problem, then you have to deal with that, you see. But if it's a mental problem, then you have to work it out in your mind. You know, it's natural. If it's a physical problem, then you have to deal with your body. But you can't let your body be the boss. Even in his final days, Srila Prabhupada was working. He was dictating. Srila Prabhupada said in his final days, he said, "I'm giving you proof that I am not these bones. I am not these bones. I am the owner of these bones." You see? Now that's a very elevated position. But we can't let the body be the boss. We have to control the mind and let the mind control the body. We have to be in charge. One sannyasi, godbrother of mine, I remember one time one of his disciples had made a beautiful dessert. I think it was some sort of a cake. And it truly was beautiful. And she set it in front of him, and he looked at it, and he said, "That is so beautiful. It's beautiful." He said, "Thank you very much. Now take it away. Because I'm in control. My tongue is wanting it. But I'm going to give my tongue a lesson. I'm the boss. You see? I'm in charge of this body." You see? That's another exercise we have to work on. We have to work on telling the body. We have to let the body know who's boss. Because the body will want to rest when it doesn't need to rest. It'll want to eat when it doesn't really need to eat. It'll tell you, "Oh, I'm feeling such distress." And you have to say, "No, no. No, no." You know, it's just like a child. If you take a child into a store, the child will want this toy and this pretty thing and this. You see, the child wants everything that glitters. And you have to say, "No, no, no, we're not getting that, no." You see? So the senses will want this, and the senses will want that. And you have to be adult. You have to be serious. And you have to say, "No, no. I'm sorry, my dear tongue, but you cannot have that right now." If you finish your rounds and finish reading, then I'll let you have it at 5 o'clock this afternoon. But not now. So now get busy, my dear tongue, and chant Hare Krishna. You see? You have to be the master. You have to be Goswami, master of the senses. You have to be the master of the body. If you don't, then it will be the master of you. It's like if you get on a horse and you don't tell the horse where to go, it may just stand there. It may decide to go over here. There's some nice green grass or something. You have to take command of the horse, and you have to show the horse who's the boss. Maybe you have to give the kick in the ribs and show the horse, you must obey me. You see? We have to do that with the body. We don't want to destroy the body, you see, because it's not our body ultimately. It belongs to Krishna. We have to take care of the body, you see. It's just like if Krishna had a beautiful motor car and he loaned it to you, well, you would take very good care of it, you see. You would change the oil. You would keep it tuned up, check the air in the tires, you see. You would do all maintenance that's required on Krishna's car, if he had a car and if he loaned it to you. But he's loaning you this body. It doesn't belong to you. We may think that it belongs to us, or we may even think that it is us, but both of those are incorrect. It belongs to Krishna, and it's on loan, and one of these days we're going to have to give it back. Have you ever thought about that? We have this body now, but someday we have to turn it in. We have to give it back to Krishna. And Krishna may look at it and say, what have you done to it? Huh? You didn't feed it properly. You didn't give it proper exercise. You didn't drink enough water. You didn't brush your teeth properly. You see? You didn't bathe it off enough. You didn't give it enough rest. Yeah? You have to have not too much and not too little rest. Not too much and not too little to eat. So we have to take care of the body. But we don't want to become fanatic about taking too much care of the body. Feeding it too much, giving it too much rest. You see? We want to give it enough. Does that make sense? So, you know, this is a good point that you bring up. How can we ever become bored in Krishna consciousness? Because we can chant and perform so much sadhana and so much service that we can balance our physical and mental health. We have to maintain the body, perform our service, perform our sadhana. It's a balancing job. We have so much to think about. We have so much that we can focus on. You see? And it's all for Krishna. It's all an offering to Krishna. Actually, service to the body, we have to serve this body because it is Krishna's. And service to the body is like an offering. You know, you ever notice when you brush your teeth in the morning? You brush your teeth. You know, when you're finished, you look in the mirror and you smile to see. You look at those nice clean teeth. You should think of that as an offering to Krishna. You see? That is Krishna. Those nice, shiny, clean teeth. You've offered that to Krishna's body. Yeah, there's probably a mantra for brushing teeth. I'm sure there is. I might have known it at one time and forgot it. There's mantra for applying tilak. There's mantra for tying sika. There's so many mantras. There's probably a mantra for cleansing the teeth. Huh? When you take a shower, you should do that as an offering to Krishna. You see? If everything that we do as an offering to Krishna, Now, don't even let any one little thing slide by that we don't think of as an offering for Krishna. What are we doing? We're remembering Krishna. It's what Krishna said. Always remember me and never forget me. So if we think of everything we do, everything, it's like the cooks, when the cooks are cooking, they're cooking for Krishna. They have this consciousness. Any more questions or comments? Does that answer? I think, should I go on? Till 9? So I can read a little, one more verse. The next translation. There are men and women in this world who sacrifice human beings to Bhairava or Bhadrakali and then eat their victim's flesh. Those who perform such sacrifices are taken after death to the abode of Yamaraj, where their victims, having taken form of Rakshasas, cut them to pieces with sharpened swords, just as in this world the man-eaters drank their victims' blood, dancing, singing in jubilation. Their victims now enjoy drinking the blood of the sacrifices of the celebrating and celebrating in the same way. So this verse here, there's no purport, but this verse kind of sums up the concept of karma, you see. So you had done this torture and offering of human beings, and your very victims after your death are performing the same activities back to you. You see? It's just like the animals that we eat. Huh? People eat animals. Those same animals will have human form and will eat them sometime. This is balance. We notice so much. In the fifth canto, we notice a great deal, especially the part where there's the description of the universe, the different islands and the different mountains, and you can see that there's such order in the universe. You know, there's no accident. It's not an accidental thing. You know, Krishna's got it set in such an orderly fashion that if you do this, you will receive this. An equal amount for every action, there's an equivalent reaction. Or what goes around comes around. It's common in the West, they say that a lot. In the Bible it says, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. You see? So you can see, as you behave, you will suffer or enjoy. You can't escape it. It happens that way. Good karma is the result of good deeds, and bad karma is the result of bad deeds. Huh? Spiritual deeds incurs spiritual advancement. So, another translation, verse 32. In this life, some people give shelter to animals and birds that come to them for protection in the village or forest, and after making them believe that they will be protected, such people pierce them with lances or threads and play with them like toys, giving them great pain. After death, such people are brought by such assistance, are brought by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Saluprota, where their bodies are pierced with sharp needle-like lances. They suffer from hunger and thirst and sharp-beaked birds such as vultures and herons come at them from all sides to tear at their bodies, tortured and suffering. They then can remember the sinful activities they committed in the past. You see? You know, once again, you know, it's demonstration that as you incur sinful reactions, you receive those same sinful reactions. Because once again, this is clarifying, it's pointing that point out. As you do, it will be done to you. You see? Krishna has created feelings in living entities. Animals such as a cow have a feeling. They can feel affection towards you. Everyone who's ever been around cows knows that they're very affectionate. You know, and you can pet the cows, and you can encourage this infection, this affection. You see, and you can do this with any type of basically mammals, not any animal. Some animals don't have the consciousness, but an animal like a cow, cats and dogs, even, you know, you can encourage this affection, and then if you turn around and harm this creature, you know, after you've encouraged this affection, you see, just see what a sinful act this is. It's low class, you know. It's hard for us to conceive. It's hard for the people in this room to conceive. So there's this heavy karma that comes from it, because more is expected from the human class of men, or the human class of entities. More is expected from human beings. Huh? You have dominion of the animals, huh? But you have the responsibility to care for them. With this greater intelligence and the dominion over the animals comes the responsibility to see after them. You see? Not only should you not torture and hurt them, but you have the responsibility to care for them. Because you have more intelligence. You have more ability. You have more resources. You should see that they don't suffer. What to speak of inflicting suffering yourself? This is what's unheard of. You should see that they don't suffer. So, are there any questions on that comment? I think we can close here. I would like to say, in 32 years of being a devotee, I've known many, many, many devotees and seen ISKCON change a great deal. Srila Prabhupada often spoke of our mission as if it were like a war. And he spoke of us, the devotees, as if we were his army. And I'd just like to say that I'm proud, because I've never seen a greater fighting force than today's ISKCON. We have so many more qualified, surrendered people. And I know Srila Prabhupada is so happy and so proud of this fighting force that is today's ISKCON. It gratifies my heart every place I go, and I see the thousands and thousands of people who are coming forward. You have my respect and my obeisances. Thank you. Hare Krishna.